This is Brian Cambria with news for the KVNF listening area Monday, March 4th, 2013. Lawmakers are nearing the midpoint of the state's legislative session. So far, a discussion on gun violence has dominated much of the debate under the Gold Dome. But as part of our Capital Conversation series, Benta Berkland takes a look at some of the other big issues lawmakers will tackle.
I'm here with Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal and Tim Hoover with the Denver Post. Ed, I want to start with you because you've been focusing on a lot of, obviously, business bills this session. What are some of the key things you've been writing about, and what's the business community most interested in?
Well, the business community has been interested in a couple of things that have come and gone already. For example, there have been five attempts to do some sort of reduction in the business personal property tax. Four of them are already dead. One of them is very minor and is moving forward. They've also been very interested in enterprise zone reform, a bill that first came up Thursday, but hit a hiccup when the bill actually said something different than its author intended it to do. That bill will come back, but it seems like businesses galvanized around it, saying we're willing to give up a little bit of tax credit in order to get tax credits in some other areas. A lot of what's happening right now, though, is the business community is waiting. They're waiting for bills to come down, bills that would involve making it easier to sue over construction defects, raising medical malpractice caps, making it harder to do hydraulic fracturing in this state.
And when do you think some of those bigger items will come down? Do you think it'll be towards the end of the session?
Your guess is as good as mine, and there is starting to be some questions about whether some of it will come in the session at all. For example, workers' comp reform is a very big issue. Senator Jesse Ulibarri, who's going to be running that, said it may come this year, it may come next year.
Tim, I know you've focused, like a lot of us, on some of the gun legislation that's moving through the legislature, but let's look ahead to some of the other non-gun related items we're going to be focused on in the latter half of the session.
Right. One of the biggest that has still yet to be filed as a piece of legislation is the rewrite of the state's school finance formula. This is the gigantic equation, if you will, that determines how schools get their portion of state funding for local schools. This is being spearheaded by State Senator Michael Johnston, a Denver Democrat. This bill is going to be hugely controversial. What you're going to see is everybody fighting for their piece of the pie. Denver arguing that, you know, we should have more money for, say, English language learners and at-risk kids. Rural school districts saying, you know, we need money for high transportation and high food costs. Suburban districts saying, hey, you guys are basically just playing Robin Hood here, stealing from us to give to all these other districts. That's going to be a big fight, and it will affect schools all over Colorado. The other thing that we haven't seen yet is a debate on the death penalty. There are some, like State Senator Morgan Carroll, an Aurora Democrat, who want to just outright repeal the death penalty. And then you have people like State Representative Rhonda Fields, also an Aurora Democrat, who say if the death penalty needs to be repealed, let's put it to voters. Fields obviously has very personal feelings about the death penalty. Her son was murdered. Her son was going to testify. So she has very strong feelings about it, doesn't want the death penalty to be repealed. So you could see a standoff, actually, among Democrats over whether the death penalty should be repealed.
Ed, you talked about fracking, and I know that there's a lot of talk in the Capitol about introducing oil and gas bills, ways to make the rules more stringent. These are proposals from Democrats. We haven't seen any of them yet. Do you think that's going to be another big fight at the end of the session?
It's not a question of if, but when those are coming. And in fact, right now what we're hearing is they could either be one omnibus bill to deal with hydraulic fracturing and oil and gas drilling overall, or it could be a whole lot, you know, 8-10 different bills that are going to hit on the subject. The most controversial of them is going to be creating greater distance between homes and wells, greater distance, I should say, than the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission approved earlier this year. This is basically the legislature saying, we don't think you're doing it well, we want to go after it. But yeah, those are definitely going to come, and I expect those will be some of the late night fights we'll see toward the end of the session.
Okay, thanks. That was Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal and Tim Hoover with the Denver Post. I'm Benta Berkland, and you've been listening to Capital Conversation.
State climatologist Nolan Duskin says March precipitation is critically important because the normally cooler weather helps moisture penetrate the ground and slows evaporation. He said last week's series of storms benefited any areas that got at least 7 inches of snow. March is traditionally a wet month, but last year the state dried out during an extremely dry and warm March, which also marked the start of a deadly fire season. Hotchkiss Fire Chief Doug Fritz has been posting data to thealmanac.org about the moisture content of trees in our area. KVNF's Marty Derlin has more.
Doug Fritz has been fire chief in Hotchkiss for a dozen years, and he's seen the area go through times of adequate precipitation and times of drought, but mostly drought. Right now, he's keeping a close eye on the amount of moisture in the trees at our elevation.
You know, everybody's really absorbed by paying attention to the snowpack up high, and while that's kind of getting to be a little bit better news, the trees at the, I'll say, 5 to 7,500-foot elevation are the trees that we need to pay attention to for how much moisture they get, and they're a bigger predictor of the fires that we'll get in the area that we live in. And maybe the most interesting part about that is that the trees really don't absorb a lot of moisture in the summertime. So when you get spring or late spring rains or early summer rains or even midsummer rains, trees don't absorb it. They're kind of locked off. They really only absorb their moisture in the late fall, winter, and early spring.
Fritz has been posting data to thealmanac.org from the JROS weather station, installed by the Montrose BLM nearly 20 years ago. North of Hotchkiss, near Jay Creek, the weather station is precisely located to predict fire danger metrics for the whole North Fork Valley. And right now, unless we have a very wet spring, Fritz says things don't look so good.
When things start going up there, like we're getting really low RHs and that it's not really cooling down a whole lot at nighttime, you could start expecting that the North Fork's fire danger is going to be increasing.
The day in February when we had our lowest relative humidity, says Fritz, there was a grass fire just north of Hotchkiss. The best way to describe our risk is that it's been at about the same high danger for over 20 years, and on extreme danger days, which occur almost every year, our risk is considerable. Although there are now fewer and more careful agricultural burns in our area, and people are hyper-aware of fire danger, Fritz says even the towns are susceptible to a fire that gets out of control.
Imagine like a windstorm that's blowing snow and how the snow drifts around the corners of your house or maybe on your roof or your eaves. And I think that everyone kind of can come to terms and really knows what the patterns around their house and how the snow piles up. Well, imagine for a moment if that were hot embers from a nearby fire. That is the really big risk of these fires spreading, and all of the towns have a big susceptibility to that. Hotchkiss, Crawford, Paonia, Delta, even, and Cedar Edge, all the major towns around here have a certain risk to being exposed to an ember storm and having multiple residences catch on fire at the same time.
Doing the precipitation dance now. I'm Marty Derlin for KVNF and ICChange at thealmanac.org.
Last week on ICChange, Maria reported a bird kill at her feeder, and Smith posted a photo of bald eagles. Remember, you can be a part of the discussion at ICChange. Let us know what changes you see at thealmanac.org. Finally, a potentially bright comet is in the skies this month. The Black Canyon Astronomical Society's Brian Cashin has more.
This could be a spectacular year for comets, ending with one that may be the brightest comet in many years, appearing in the last 2 to 3 months of the year. There's another potentially bright comet in March. This is the comet Pan-STARRS. The comet was discovered by the Pan-STARRS 1.8-meter telescope in Hawaii. The primary purpose of Pan-STARRS is to discover and monitor approaching comets and asteroids, some of which could present hazards to the Earth. Pan-STARRS can also be used to discover other transient objects, such as exploding stars, variable stars, and Earth satellites. By the end of 2013, the Pan-STARRS system will be complete and consist of four telescopes identical to the first one. Each telescope has a digital camera with 1.4 billion pixels. While the Pan-STARRS telescope system is used to detect objects with orbits that could threaten Earth, this comet poses no danger to our planet. The comet will pass closest to Earth on March 5th and will be about 100 million miles away. The comet will then pass within 30 million miles of the Sun on March 10th. Although the comet will go around the Sun, its orbit is such that it will not disappear from our vantage point on Earth. Predictions of a comet's brightness are quite variable, but this comet may be visible to the naked eye from early March to mid-April. It will appear low in the western sky just after sunset. On March 12th, this comet will be just south of a very thin crescent moon. You've been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Brian Cashin.
Thus concludes today's newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.